Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to need a bigger internet. Beef, wine, and shenanigans. I'm Stephen Van Patten, joined, as always, by Kirk Johnson, Denise Tapscott, and Mark Abbott, who appears to be in a little bit of danger at the moment. And I'd like you all to please welcome. We haven't quite figured out if I'm his evil twin or he's mine, Mr. Steve Van Sampson.
Yes.
Some info on Mr.
I think
Van
we could
Sampson.
Both be the good. Could we both be the good twin? I mean, maybe like you're the cool twin, I'm the lame twin. Maybe it's more like that. We're still like lawful good, technically.
You know what? That may be one of the nicer things that anybody has said on this show, and not that this show has a very high bar for nice things being said. But I appreciate it.
No problem. Well, I mean, I always refer to us to everybody I possibly can as the Steve Van Somethings. So
nice.
whoever's good, whoever's bad, it's irrelevant.
The Steve Van Somethings. Well, you know what? Now we need to start a band.
like Van Halen.
It's like you're the Lee Roth, I'm the Sammy Hagar, you know, only I'm more liberal than he is.
Why can't y'all both have guitar player? You can both
there's like no room for nobody. I don't know, it's gonna be terrible.
Denise will do vocals, Denise will do lead vocals. Mark is a bass player because he has it in his blood. I can see it.
We'll have two drummers and five vocalists.
Right,
wait, what was that from? You play bass. I don't know how to. Oh no, that was South Park, right?
That was South Park, yeah.
When it made the black, they gave the black kid a bass. Yeah.
Bass.
And I can't play bass. Oh my god!
Yeah, then he plays it. You're like, oh god damn it.
That's funny.
All right. So real quick, I want to take this moment to promote Mr. Van Sampson's work.
Yes.
Including with that, Mark of the Witch Worm. Among other things, includes No God But Hunger, which was a big, big hit.
Well, so it's not Mark of the Witch Worm that has that. It's the new one's Black Honey.
Yeah, Black Honey has
Black Honey. And,
Yes.
Mark of the Witch Worm is a book I wrote, but that was a novel from 2021. That's my Sword and Sorcery.
Yes.
But Black Honey.
Yes.
Continue, please.
Yes.
All right.
Actually,
so,
when you're ready, I have a sort of social question, actually.
Oh, like, nice.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So yeah, No God But Hunger. And not only was it a fan favorite in this anthology that also includes a story from myself and a few other like.
Oh, we're talking like, Slay.
We're talking Slay.
Slay. Oh, this is Slay. Yeah.
What I was going to say is what was great about it is that it was this post-apocalyptic adventure story that basically had like three separate groups fighting with each other. And one of the groups being a sort of your version of a vampire. And one thing that really stuck out to me in that story was the sort of dirt cocoon that was implied in that story, and it stuck with me because it was a departure from, you know, the usual vampire lore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that, you know, having some experience with writing about vampires myself, I often get asked, well, wait, that's not, you know, because basically what ends up happening is as writers of vampire lore, we often take it upon ourselves to maybe switch rules and move shit around and things like that. And sometimes people question it, but I mean, my whole thing is always, as long as I am true to the rules that I set at the beginning of the story, then I'm good, because what I'm doing is I'm creating my own mythos.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on, like, well, first of all, was there a specific inspiration for the dirt cocoon, or Ooh. Like, how did we get to that? Let's just go there.
Awesome question. No one's ever asked about it. So, and I mean that, like, that's an awesome question. So, okay. So first of all, in case you don't know, maybe you don't. So No God But Hunger first appeared in Slay. Now it's in Black Honey, which is my new one. So that is a spinoff from my first two books. My first two books are, the first one is called The Bone Eater King. And the sequel to that is Marrow Dust. And those are both my vampire apocalypse stories. They're set in Africa. Oh, and wow. I went out to specifically, you know, write a different kind of vampire story that I hadn't seen before. Mm-hmm. And I in no way created the idea of vampires in Africa at all. I'm not trying to suggest that I did, but it isn't something that's overly explored, right?
Right.
So I went through, as I'm creating this lore, this new mythos or whatever, I tried to make some things I put in there are like gimmies. Like, it's not gonna feel like vampires if they aren't allergic to the sun. It's not gonna feel like a vampire. So it has to be at nighttime. The sun's gonna burn them. How, whatever the scientific reason is, I don't know, because I tried to keep everything kind of biological. I tried to treat the whole thing is, I call it the Predator World series. That's the right. umbrella series. And I tried to treat vampires like a predator in the food web. What would happen? So if you take something like a pig and you put it where there's never been pigs, if you put pigs and let them loose on New Zealand, those birds that all live in New Zealand, like the cute Kiwis, they are, can I swear on the show?
Of course you can.
They are.
Fuck yeah.
Okay. So those pigs are going to eat all the.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He froze.
They wreak havoc with crocodile populations and stuff like that. So anyway, so I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, what do I want? What do I want to keep? What do I want to change? The dirt cocoon thing. Actually, there is a specific bit of inspiration that I took from Vampire the Masquerade, if anybody remembers that.
Oh.
I don't know if this came from that truly, but it's where I was introduced to it, where, okay, I don't remember what the power was, but I played like one round of Vampire the Masquerade when I was in high school with some friends. And one of the powers that they could do was they could meld into the earth if there was nothing else around. So they sort of just, I don't know, like pride, like phased into the earth. Okay. So I completely stole that idea. And I've never talked about this because no one's ever asked. But my thought was that if there is no shelter, then this is like an innate sort of a reflex that will happen where their body just finds something and the materials of whatever can come up around them. It's not going to be like absorbing, man. If they do it like, you know, on steel, it's not going to do anything, but dirt. And actually the very, very end of The Bone Eater King, the very last like paragraph is where it happens for the first time. And it's a total shocker and I'm kind of spoiling it, but it doesn't happen with dirt. I will say that there's some other thing, and that actually was my initial me taking the Vampire the Masquerade thing where they can meld into the dirt and doing it in my own way. And then with No God But Hunger, it is described as being done simply with dirt, which is more directly referencing that. I wish I could remember what the power was. I just don't remember what it was called, but I'm sure some of your fans.
Do you remember the clan?
Not specifically, honestly. It was definitely a something that was done by different clans. It was because I remember, you know, certain powers would be exclusive for certain clans, but a lot of them were shared. Mm. I feel like this was a shared one that a few of them could do. I will say this, there was a Vampire the Masquerade show that was on in the 90s for one season.
Yes, there was.
I can't remember. Kindred the Embraced.
Kindred the Embraced, and that's right. The DVDs are in there somewhere.
Yeah. There you go. And the main dude does it in one of the episodes. He just, and it's not explained, but he just like Kitty prides.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Instead of having like just phase into the dirt, I'm like, all right, well, it's kind of more like it kind of covers them. It's like a dirt cocoon. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
That sounds
It's definitely creepy. Like creating your own mythos, what you said, Steve, is like 100% like the idea. It's like, find the places that you can change stuff to make it your own thing, and then stick to that. Do not deviate from your own rules and you'll be fine. Because I've had people, it's so funny whenever somebody says, but can vampires do that though for something? And I'll be like, bro, you know, vampires are like fake, right?
You know them motherfuckers ain't real, right? Other niggas ain't real, right?
My vampires can, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
It's like, are vampires black? They're gonna be black today.
Well, you know, for my world, that was one of the things I did, was I made all, no matter what skin tone you happen to be when you get turned into a vampire, you end up being jet black.
Right.
Oh, wow.
White, brown, you just turn jet black. There are no pale, pasty vampires.
And look at that.
Gold star.
Look at that.
Gold star.
And solved racism. Look at that. He just solved racism.
Hey, like, even more important, you're invited to the cookout.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, so
he's
like
Armenian. He's cooking, first of all.
I've been cooking some Spanish stuff lately. Stars. I don't know if you've seen on my feed, but
I was getting hungry looking at
that. As long as you got the turning herbs and spices, you're
really,
good.
Really spreading
the wings. Cooking some good stuff.
So my vampires are hairless, jet black. They have claws. They have fangs. And the one key is that their eyes are solid red, like whole cherries. That's how I describe them.
Wow.
So they don't glow. There's no glowing eyes or anything like that. But they don't have pupils or anything like that. They're just solid red.
Wow.
And there is something in there where there's a girl in the first book who is like the second to main character, and she becomes the main character of Marrow Dust. And there is a third possible color you can be, which is gray. And that's the Bone Eater King. He's a monstrous version, and he's gray. He's the only one that isn't black. So there's a way that a mutation can occur and you become like ashen gray, sort of. So she goes from being a brown woman from Uganda to being jet black, to being gray. And this is something that she does mention in the third one, in the second book, where she's like, for God's sakes, like, how many me's do I have to, you know, get used to? I'm now too removed from my actual vision of myself, kind of a thing.
Oh, wow.
But she's the star of No God But Hunger, this character, Ray. And she's one of my favorite characters I've ever seen. She's a big one for me, so.
Oh, yeah, wow.
She sounds very badass.
She's the main character of that story. So if you read No God But Hunger, it happens actually directly before Bone Eater King. So if you read that first and then read Bone Eater King, it's like seamless. It goes right into it.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Anyway, good stuff. I wrote those two books back in 2017, so they've been out for a while now. But
isn't it wild how sometimes you'll have done something a while ago and then all of a sudden it catches fire?
It's a beautiful thing. I think you're being too kind, but thanks. Yeah. You know what? I'll let you know when that happens. Maybe after this episode that'll happen.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Stranger Trails Things have happened.
Yes.
Yes. So Kirk Johnson here is also a sword and sorcery person.
Yes.
And I know you had a sword and sorcery related question.
I did. So Mark of the Witchworm,
yes, sir,
is your sword and sorcery. I read Epic Fantasy on the blurb for it on Goodreads. So what is your take? I mean, why a full length novel and not a set of short stories? Because there's, you know, I remember reading debates about sword and sorcery is so different from epic fantasy that, you know, it works best as a short form literature as opposed to a novel, because novels are set for epic fantasy where you get to explore the world and the food and you go in. So what was your thinking for making it into a novel?
Well, Well, the funny thing is with that one, I've had the, you know, we know as writers, right? Like sometimes there are characters and story ideas that you've had in you for like, since you were a kid and you're still going to get to them at some point. Right. Like it's just how we, our brains work. They won't shut up. They won't put things away
from you. So I've had true.
Yeah. So I've had this character that was going to be like my, it wasn't originally Sword and Sorcery. It was my Castlevania character. I was obsessed with Castlevania always.
Okay.
I still love it. This is one of my favorite video. I love video games. I love retro video games. I am a co-host of the Retro Redoctopocephala podcast. If you know, that can just be said real quick. Steve's actually been on that once, and we had a good time talking about vampire movies. I think we talked about.
Yes.
So anyway, we love nostalgia. So anyway, so you know, Castlevania. So this started out as like my fan fiction Castlevania character, and then over time, I'm like, well, I don't really actually want it to be linked to Castlevania, really. I can't use it then, and it's fine. But I liked the idea of like, you know, this idea that you can have fantasy, but you can have vampires and monsters and stuff like that. Now that was before The Witcher existed, but yeah. I'm not a huge Witcher fan. Like something about it doesn't really work for me, but I love the idea of The Witcher, and I love that kind of a character. I love Conan. I love you know, all the old sword and sorcery. Like there's something about it. It is truly different than fantasy and epic fantasy and high fantasy and all this stuff. So I'm like, all right, I like this like spooky horror melded with fantasy sort of thing. So I want to do something like that. And in fact, Kirk, I wanted to do a series of short stories, or maybe I was thinking maybe they're not short stories. Maybe they're novellas. Maybe they're like 20,000 words each or something like
novelettes
that.
Novelettes and novellas. And
yeah, something like that. Maybe it would be like that. So anyway, so I had this idea, and originally it was, well, it's in Castlevania, every, you know, game that came out for a long time, you were a different member of the Belmont clan, but there was always this history of this family that was always built into the series. It didn't matter what, you know, you could be Kirk Belmont and it's fine. You're meeting Kirk Belmont for the first time, but you understand that like, oh, he's from the Belmont clan, though he's a badass and he comes from a long line of badasses. And I liked that a lot. I liked that idea. So when I decided to divorce it from Castlevania, I really wanted to have something with the lineage there. And so what I decided to do was like, I'm thinking about the dad, and I'm like, well, okay, so he doesn't kill Dracula anymore, but like, what is he gonna do? What made his dad a man of repute, a man of legend, a man where, you know, the son would grow up being compared to this great man and get sick of it and want to like leave? And because I always, my Belmont was the dissenting Belmont that was sick of it and wanted to shirk his duties because it's just too much expected. That was my idea. So I liked that idea. I still like that idea. So what I ended up doing was writing the story of his dad. And I was like, well, I do really want to write all these shorter things with the son, which was always going to be my main character guy. And instead I sat down for 3 years and I wrote the backstory of his dad, and it became Mark of the Witchworm. So,
okay.
It's the longest thing I've written. It's like over 400 pages. I haven't come close to that yet. So, but I'm really proud of it. And, you know, I appreciate the question. And I don't know, I also really wanted it to not be, it was important to me that that book is a standalone novel because I like standalone novels. I like that. I don't appreciate that in the world of fantasy, you are expected to write a 27 book frickin' Robert Jordan series.
Brandon Sanderson.
I mean, I can't, first of all, I can't do that output. Anyway, it took me 3 years to write the 400 page book. It did. So it's like, okay, maybe I could be faster next time, but man, it doesn't matter. It's irregardless. Cause I like standalone novels. So I wanted to, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to write. I treated it like the anti-fantasy book. Like this is, it is what it is, you know, but.
Love it. Love it. Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you, man.
Yes, sir.
Great. Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow. Did I have a, shit, I had another question too for you about your so is Sword and Sorcerer, would you consider it Sword and Sorcerer or Epic Fantasy then? Or
so I go Sword and Sorcery.
Sword and Sorcery?
Right. Yep, or Dark Fantasy. Those are the two I like better. I call it because I'm always winking. I'm always like trying to be funny. So I right. on the cover it's called it's a book of axes and alchemy. So it's not right. sword and sorcery. It's axes and alchemy because there's axes and there isn't actually magic. So if your question that you couldn't remember was, hey Steve, what's your magic system like? The answer is. Well, Kirk, there isn't one.
Right. Fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, there's unbelievable shit. There's
that like, sounds like some powerful magic.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I allowed myself to put the most unbelievable stuff in with the creatures. So if I'm probably never going to do a straight up dragon, but like maybe the dragon can breathe fire and who fucking cares why, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
So the witch worm in the book does some pretty unbelievable stuff, but there's no like wizards walking around with sticks, like shooting magic missiles or anything like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. If you're into that, that's totally fine. It's just not in this book. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
I'll say it. There's something wrong with that shit, man. Fuck that. I want a fucking bearded wizard smoking weed. Ain't no black people around. Fuck y'all.
There's nothing saying that the two blue wizards in Lord of the Rings weren't black dudes. I mean, there's nothing saying that. There's nothing
agreed.
Saying that.
You just don't see them.
You're just like, never going to know. We are never going to know, but there's nothing saying that they are black dudes. That's all
that it's like, point.
It's like the Song of Ice and Fire. It's, yeah, all the black people are chilling because Westeros is too fucked up. Like, I ain't going there, man. They got rid of affirmative action. They can't let trans people be. There's only one place you can hang out in, and it's always like hot, and motherfuckers don't like them.
Yeah, no, there is straight up no reason for Game of Thrones to be as white as it is. There just isn't. I mean, like he came up with like, oh, the Summer Isles or this nebulous right. place that black people live apparently, and it's like the Caribbean, I guess. And once in a while, you see a black character, and like, oh, they're from the Summer Isles. It's like a crazy thing I saw, like. The fuck, there's just no reason for it, so whatever.
There's a reason. Westeros is too fucking violent. Y'all motherfuckers do too much shit, man. I don't hang out in Dorne.
I mean, this
what's that line from Luke Cage? I'm going back uptown, man.
I mean, you know, the show did a better job than the books, and the show did not do a good job. So, I mean, like, there's a couple more characters. I mean, Grey Worm became cooler.
Right. Yep.
I mean, come on. You got to really
again. When that. The bar is low. Anyway. Yeah.
It's easy to step over it.
Yes. It's easy. You don't have to limbo anyway. That's for sure.
Well, my dude is supposed to be very Native American inspired. So that was the thing. It's like putting it in a box. Mark of the Wishworm is like Native American Conan type. But he's not going out there to rape and pillage. He's trying to save his son. It's brutal. It's a serious story, but he's going out there for a selfless reason. It's perfect. A little more complicated than that.
No, that's awesome. It's that's the moral ambiguity of characters is a sword and sorcery thing already. So now I can use like Eric Swieg as the vision of your main character. He played Uncas in Last of the Mohicans. Eric Swieg. Okay. So young Eric Swieg is that's the vision I have. As opposed to Jason Momoa.
Yeah, definitely not.
My stars.
Jason Momoa has been.
Yeah, that's. I would. Denise is thinking about a completely different movie.
Yes. Different book altogether. She's thinking about a different book.
Well.
And she's in it.
Right. Written by John.
the guy I actually really love. I don't remember his name. Hold on one second. What's his name? He was Kimmy Schmidt's dad in the Kimmy Schmidt show. And there was that movie Wind River, I think, with Jeremy Renner. Is that what that was called?
Wind River.
Wind River. It was a really great movie. So so you guys should, this is a sidebar. Go see this movie. It's called Wind River. It came out in 2017. It stars Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. And it's dealing with the fact that Native American girls are brutally murdered and left on the side of the road all the
time. I heard about that movie, yes.
This is a great movie. So the man's name I'm talking about is Gil Birmingham. He's a Native dude. I love this guy. Unfortunately, he's too old for, like, he's 69 now.
Right.
So he's too old for my character. But, man, I like this guy. If he was, like, maybe 50 or in between 45 and 55, maybe.
Yeah, I see him.
He'd be a great choice. I also like the guy who was John Rainbird in the new Firestarter movie, but that movie was hot garbage. But he's cool. Mm.
Yeah. Flaming hot garbage.
Yeah, they did kind of screw that one up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, screw the pooch, as we say in Hollywood terms.
So I have a question. Steve.
Yes, sir.
I see in the background a poster of the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Yes.
What was your wheelhouse when you got into horror? Was it those types of pictures, or was it something more obscure that you saw when you were growing up? And you were like, yeah, that's me right there.
So first of all, you're the first person who's ever noticed the poster. And it just tickles me so pink. So thank you. I actually also have the actual Beast up on the shelf behind me too. So you can't.
Oh, no shit.
Ooh.
Oh. Oh wow.
All right. I'll just get him.
Yeah.
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 Get the beast.
Ouch.
Bruce. Oh, yes. Shit.
Awesome.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my stars.
I hope the whole thing doesn't come collapsing down.
And then we just bring blame.
You bought two monsters for us.
There he is.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is awesome. So cool.
And now we have
where'd
two.
Where'd
you
get guests. It from? Yes.
This is from Sideshow.
Oh yes.
Awesome. Oh, love that. Oh my god. Look at the detailing on that tail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what she said. Yeah.
He said
Harryhausen would be proud.
I'm a fan. I mean, we're all geeks, right? We love this stupid shit, right? Like, I assume maybe somebody who's watching the show might think that was cool too. And even if they think I'm less cool, I don't care. Getting into stuff, like, my thing was always monsters and creatures. So, like, this is what I always tell people, like, you know, I love Star Wars. And when people are like, you know, who's your favorite character in Star Wars? And people are like, oh, is it Han Solo? Or, you know, is it Luke? Or is it Leia? Or I'm like, no, it's a fucking Tauntaun. Like, I legitimately love the creatures more than anything, and the Rancor, and you know, the space slug that they have to jet out of, and the asteroid. Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And this is no cave.
This is no cave. And, like, you know, we actually on my podcast Retro Octopus, we actually got to interview this lady Terrell Whitlatch. She did all the creature design for Phantom Menace.
Oh, nice.
And that was so cool. She did every creature on that entire movie. She even did Jar Jar.
Mm. Wow.
But hey, you know, she's getting paid. So, I mean, like, remember those, like, all the underwater monsters and stuff? Mm-hmm. That one scene?
Oh, I love that creature. The one that bit the other.
The bigger
fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As always.
Bigger fish.
So for me, it was like, whatever it was, I was just excited to see the monster. I remember the first time my mom rented Alien for me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see Alien only because of Spaceballs, because I love Spaceballs, and I love Mel Brooks like so much.
He's awesome.
Oh my god, I'm just such a Mel Brooks fan. So anyway, I love Spaceballs so much, and my mom, this is when I was a little kid, explained to me the end. I'm like, just laughing, you know, and then you have John Hurt, and he's like, oh no, not again.
Again, yes.
And I'm like, why does he say that? And my mom's like, oh, well, because it's a joke, because this happened in Alien and it was the same guy. And I was like, what? I want to see that movie. So the movie is like taking weight. We rent it. And it was like, I am bored. I am so bored. Now, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. Now it's Alien. Yeah, is, yeah. I am a huge, huge, huge fan of that series. Alien is in my heart like few things are. But I was a stupid little bored kid, I was like, when's the alien monster gonna happen?
Right.
You know, and I was just so impatient. I remember the same thing happened. We rented 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and all I cared about was the giant squid. And I'm like, that movie is long. Mm-hmm. That movie is long. You have to put up with like Kirk Douglas singing on a ukulele with like he's serenading.
Oh my god.
Peter Lorre, and like it's like when is the squid happen, Mom? And she's like, Steve, it's not for a long time. And I'm like, and you know, where's the giant squid? I want to see the giant squid. And she's like, honestly, at this point, it's not even going to be fulfilling. You're going to be disappointed. It's like 2 seconds. You're your stupid giant squid. Anyway, so for me, that's pretty much how I entered into a lot of the horror that I like, is because, you know, so for Godzilla, I love Godzilla. I love Harryhausen stuff, you know, Jaws, anything where there's like a big creature, big monster effect. I just was always a huge fan of that. The first scary movie I think I ever saw that was a horror movie, even though it's more of a horror comedy, is Fright Night. And I always go back to Fright Night as my first. And, I, to this day, it's one of my faves. I love that movie so much. I love Jerry Dandridge. He's one of my favorite vampires ever. He's such a smooth mofo, and he eats apples, and like he's just such an awesome dude.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Charlie. He's so fucking charming. Like, it's like, you know,
sexy pants should
instantly fall off when he says hi, Charlie. No matter what sex you are, no matter what you're into, who you're into, it doesn't matter. Your pants just fall off instantly. No choice. I'm like, look, all right, Chris Sarandon. Look, I'm not into you. I'm gonna pull him back up, but they did fall off.
They did.
Takes a strong man to admit some stuff like that. Let me ask.
Gender is fluid anyway, so you know.
These days it is. Let me ask you this. How did you, since we're on the subject of Fright Night, how did you feel about the remake?
Oh.
All right. No. Well, I'll take it from all of that.
Yeah. Let him have it. Let him have it.
I mean, so not as to just rip it apart. I mean, what's his name? The Doctor Who dude, David Tennant. David Tennant was awesome, and it was a great idea to make like that type of a character. And because we don't really have horror hosts as much anymore, it's not as much of a thing.
There's like Svengoolie, like, and that's kind of it.
Yeah,
right. And like then there are like the local people who are like trying to bring that back and trying to, you know, I know some people like that you know are on like the smaller screen, but. You know, yeah, it's just not the same. So to make somebody like a David Blaine or whoever he was going for is kind of just made a lot of sense. And I do love David Tennant. How can you not love David Tennant? He's amazing in everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the best in him and Michael Sheen just bickering like an old married couple videos of them hanging out. That's actually the best thing he's ever done. But
Bad Omens, right?
Bad Omens.
Yeah, this is really good. But yeah, not too big a fan.
So not so much.
Yeah, a lot of it was the original Jerry Dandridge. And Colin Farrell, you know, I think he just knocked it out of the park as the Penguin so bad. And I just cannot believe how much I loved. I never liked the Penguin. I was never a big Colin Farrell guy. I'm never a fan of either of those two things. And that freaking performance was like my favorite part of that movie, and I liked that movie. And I was really met on him for a long time. Oh, and I loved him in the Banshees of what is it? Banshees
in
Inisherin, right? Love that awesome movie, amazing movie. But for a while there, I think he was one of those actors who kept getting pushed into all these Hollywood blockbusters, and I think he was just kind of always collecting a paycheck. Like I don't ever think he was that good. And those checks in the mail. Yeah.
I think the first movie I ever saw him in, the first movie he got attention for was Mopic 28 or something of that nature. It was a Vietnam movie. He played a recruit. He played like that rebel recruit. And he was actually really good. I noticed him in that. That was like the first movie I think he ever did.
Okay.
For a big budget and stuff. And then he did SWAT, and I was like, ah, fuck you.
I don't have anything against the guy. He had a funny cameo in Scrubs one time, I'll say that. That was out of nowhere, but he was somebody that I always felt he was just kind of dialing it in. But yeah. I do believe he's a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
I just think
to get the right role. Like
To your point, he proved he can act with that Penguin performance year after year. Right there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh my God.
Because honestly, I'm sitting in the theater and I'm like, wait, who's Colin Farrell supposed to be? You know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's the pink. Get the fuck out of here.
If I didn't know going in, I would have watched the whole movie and been like, where was Colin Farrell?
Yeah. I actually forgot it was him.
Yeah, me too.
So,
oh my God, nuts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, cheers to you, Mr. Farrell. If you're listening,
and here's to the beast.
To the beast. Yes.
To the beast. And to the beast in all of us. Speaking of beasts, so Black Mirror season 6.
Oh,
holy shit.
I really, and so
Mark had already kind of like peeped us earlier this month because he had kind of already had dived into it, and that werewolf episode,
Maisie Day.
I want to call that the Dusk Till Dawn of werewolf stories, because literally do not see this coming at all. It is just like, I'm sorry. Wait, what?
Right.
Yeah.
And the way they just kind of like, and it, it, so the fun thing for me anyway was to watch it over for the very, very subtle hints
that
this is where we were going. And they were subtle indeed.
Yeah.
But they were
I gotta watch it again.
I feel it was a little too subtle for my taste, to be honest with you.
Well, but like, I think that made the surprise all the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, which one was it? Locke Henry was more of a surprise than.
Okay.
Locke Henry with the family.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mom and dad and the cop. That was more of a like a holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to like I you know how I feel about the actress. So love me some Atlanta. Yeah. But yeah, Locke. My big thing was Demon 79.
That was a great one too. Yeah, I like how they ended it.
That actually opened up a wormhole, because apparently that last line that the cop says is from a BBC movie called Threads that I looked up, and people were like, "Oh, you should see it." And I looked at it, and it is the British version of The Day After Tomorrow, and I'm like, I'm not ready for that, because it was done in the 80s, about nuclear holocaust in Britain, what happens, and apparently that line is from that show, is paying homage to it.
Wow.
So at some point I'm gonna sit down and watch that, but I was like, huh.
too soon.
Right.
I will tell you this though. I watched Joan is Awful twice. Three times.
Oh my goodness.
So here's a funny thing. If you go back and watch it on the Streamberry.
I love that.
Okay. All of those stories are on Streamberry.
Yep.
If you look carefully, those stories are
the lowest third. Yeah,
I didn't pay attention. Oh my stars!
And just Salma Hayek doing comedy is her being herself. just yeah. an it's just yeah.
like Alex remember Steve. Early yeah. with Denise.
Oh no. No. Hubba, hubba. Hubba, hubba. Hubba.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Woo. Summer.
Yeah.
Although
man, I love it when anybody plays it like a douchey version of themselves. That's like my favorite. That's like an instant way for me to love an actor if I didn't already.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like if say Colin Farrell were to like play a douchey version of himself. Or like it was, you know, the last movie he made was like Alexander or something, and he did that, I'd be like, oh, I like this dude, he's pretty cool, he's pretty
awesome. Right, I forgot he was an Alexander.
Yeah.
Nobody yeah. remembers it exists because you don't need to.
Nice.
Costume nice. Design was really good though. Costume design was actually very good on that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that though,
and outside of that, that's what we got.
Mm-hmm.
The space one was good too. That was sad.
What was that one? Yeah. Beyond the Sea.
Beyond the Sea.
Yeah.
That was sad.
That one took me out. I wasn't
sure which way it was going to go. Like at one point, I thought that the one that's like really depressed, I thought he was going to kill.
That's what the guy. I thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, ooh.
And then I was like, oh, you just y'all. Oh yeah, I forgot. It's Black Mirror.
Yeah.
You forget what you're watching.
Right, you do.
They have They're to so remind good. You.
Yes.
That was another, and then you're like, that was another one that was like, I didn't feel like, I didn't know, I didn't, it just didn't feel to me like, you know, there was any other inclination at how violent he was. Because that's violence beyond violence. That's mm-hmm. like you got a sense that he was in depression,
yeah,
infatuation, mm-hmm. right? Moving into those realms. But, you know, that kind of violence is another thing altogether.
Well, I felt
like it's one thing if he just strangled him. Like, if he strangled him, that was one thing.
Yeah.
But there's blood everywhere.
Like, nigga, what you do? I just felt like it was part of, like, their society, though, because the people that killed his family, and then they go and turn themselves in, like, suddenly kind of like a...
That was a Manson family.
But it was, like, 60s Manson. Like, he has to be high on shit.
Right.
Like LSD.
But they thought they were doing the right thing. So I think it just changed the mentality of everyone like in that universe. Because that's why the other guy and his family like way out in the middle of nowhere. And she's also like, there's no people, but he's trying to protect them from that society. Oh, okay. That's how I felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But all of them, they're all crazy and violent.
Speaking of which, they're actually getting ready to release, I forget the woman's name, but she's been in for like 50 years or so.
Oh, one for the Manson murders. Yeah. Dan Houghton. They released one of them already
a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
didn't they?
They
released one of them, and then she was just sort of like, I'm just happy to be out.
Right.
Like,
stop releasing them motherfuckers and release everybody who got life sentences and shit for selling weed.
Right. Because they would be a lot younger, that part. Yeah. Let them live their lives.
Right.
There's
a dude right now in jail right now looking at his cellmate going, I'm about to get fucked tonight. I wish I was out. All I did was sell weed.
I wish I sold weed, you know, this year and it'd be fine.
Right.
How about that?
Yeah.
What's your favorite, Steve?
I'm in
Van Sampson.
Oh, that one.
Steve,
the two Steve.
You know, I was afraid that was going to happen at some point.
Well, technically, you're Steven, right?
Well, then there's that. Well, yeah. Well, yeah. All right. So, as far as my book covers go, and in general, yeah, sure. But I mean, I don't know. It with other people, it depends on their comfort level. Like a lot of people, of course, call me SVP and whatever, and you know, it's fine.
And other names.
And then there's
Hey you, Lucius.
Yeah. Lucius.
I signed all my artwork. I always sign my artwork Van Sam to try to get it to catch on, but it just hasn't yet. I don't know.
I own an original Van Sam.
Here's the thing. I don't want you guys to feel bad because it's totally my fault because I did get the heads up. I haven't seen the whole season.
Okay.
So it's okay. Spoil away. It's your show. But I've seen Joan is Awful and it was awesome. I loved it so friggin' much. I love Annie Murphy so much.
Me too.
And it was great seeing her in such a different role. And oh my God, that ending just blew my mind. And then it's like mind blowing. It's like blown, like, right? Like all these things happen in a row. You're just not at all expecting. And then it didn't end badly. I'm like, wait a minute. Is this Black Mirror or what? This ended kind of good. Like, this is hopeful.
Right. I want to say they saved the bleakness for other episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was kind of wondering.
Yeah.
So I know we're, you know, let's stay on season 6 Black Mirror, but just quick question. Did you guys see and do you have opinions on the Cabinet of Curiosities that came out last whatever?
Oh, not yet. Not yet.
Yeah.
I did.
He's popping up on my thing.
That, and I have feelings, but I feel like this is going to be far superior. The one episode seems like it would be.
I got the feeling it was like the stories and production. It felt like, I want to say, Creepshow. Like, is it Creepshow? On they used to come on HBO.
Yeah,
Tales from the Crypt.
Tales
from the Crypt. Okay. They kind of felt like those kind of stories.
Mm.
Not so much like oh my God, but more like, oh, that sucks. You know, like the horror and the ending of the horror, the gruesomeness was all, it just was not as of a gut punch or as heart-wrenching as Beyond the Sea or as a gut punch as Maisie Day is. Maisie Day is grim as fuck. I love it for that. But the Cabinet of Curiosities, you know what, it'd be PG-13. Black Mirror's Maisie Day would be rated R.
Okay.
You know, Demon 69 would be PG-13. No, it'd be actually R as well.
It would be R, but kind of a light R.
Like a light R. Locke Henry.
You know what I mean?
It's a pink R.
It's a pink R, right.
It's a pink R. Locke Henry is an R.
Mostly R.
Locke Henry is an R. But
the diet.
Cabinet of Curiosities.
Yeah.
Nice.
Right. Zero calories.
Just one calorie, not quite restricted enough.
Yeah. But I do appreciate what Guillermo del Toro is doing.
And I
like the opening.
The opening is great. I think the diversity in the directors.
Yeah.
In case you caught that there's a lot of ladies, of ladies in the mix. Which is great. You know.
Yeah.
You know, because hey, sisters can do horror too, baby.
We like horror, I'm telling you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Speaking of which, and I was just going to throw this out, just as kind of like a, because I went down an internet rabbit hole recently, big surprise, and I found something called the Bechdel test. You ever heard of this? Any of you?
Yeah. Yes.
I was telling you about that, the Bechdel test one time.
Yes.
And I said, they should do a black version of the Bechdel test. There's a black, the black version, go ahead. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead. You were saying.
But yeah, explain it for the people that don't know what it is.
So the people that don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually a way to sort of, I guess, filter or screen your movie or your bit of literature or something along those lines. But the basic gist is, the question would be, does your whatever movie, story, whatever, does it pass the Bechdel test? And the way you pass the Bechdel test is you have to have two major characters that are women,
mm-hmm.
and they have to talk to each other
mm-hmm.
about something other than a man.
Exactly. Yep.
Now,
and guess who failed that? And Sex and the City failed.
Yeah.
What?
You know what?
Yeah.
Oh, because they're always talking about men.
Yeah.
That's all they do.
About men. That's all they talk about. Yeah.
I had not even thought about that.
Yeah.
Holy shit. I mean, all right. Wait. So.
Holy shit.
And I had a feeling when I threw it up in the air that there was going to be some mind blowing shit about, you know, once we started discussing it. But okay, you just,
he's off the rails.
Kind of fucked me up there for a second. Like,
you got me fucked up, baby.
Four main characters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like they're the show.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And mind you, I was not a big fan of the show. I didn't watch the show. As a matter of fact, I was living with a now ex at the time who would insist on, you know, trying to get me to watch it. And odd because, you know, I would be trying to watch other things.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, call me when Deadwood's on, you know, that kind of shit.
Right.
And she would get mad. And I was like, you should be happy I don't want to watch this because it means I'm not gay. So,
Damn.
And that made me, you know, a little much.
Wait. No, because I had an ex-boyfriend, and the ex-boyfriend like insisted that we watch like the second movie, and I was like, "Are you serious? I didn't want to watch it. There's no monsters. There's no ghosts. No, we got to see Sex and the City too." At hidden, yeah, that's why he is an egg.
Hmm. But you know who did? You know who did pass the Bechdel test?
Who?
If we really think about it, Awkward Black Girl.
Oh yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What passed the Bechdel test? Awkward Black Girl. Issa Rae. Insecure.
Oh, okay.
Oh well, definitely. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. That makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. And the remake of Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it should.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because they're talking about ghosts.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Imagine
about ghosts. Were the ghost dudes though? Were they dude ghosts? Because that might count. Like, does that count?
You know, gender is a fluid concept.
It's ectoplasmic. Gender is ectoplasmic in the ghost.
Ectoplasmic. There we go.
Right.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Black Widow also passed it, actually, now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, it should
definitely. Yeah, Black Widow. Yeah, there's some great
sort of no though, because they're talking about their dad. That's a man,
right? But not through the whole
thing. Off the top of my head, I would say Justice League. That's a big no.
Yeah
that's
right. you don't even have two women.
You don't have two women. Yeah,
Wonder Woman on some tokenism shit, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But, right.
A lot of stuff doesn't pass.
She didn't even get to talk to Lois. She doesn't even get to talk to, like, you know, Aquaman squeeze of the week, you know?
right.
Hold on. She had that delightful British lady who was from Shaun of the Dead. I don't remember her name, but she was like, she was cool. She definitely had scenes with her.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. All right.
So I think technically, I think. Oh, and you know, they were on Themyscira. What are you talking about? They totally passes. The first
quarter
of the movie, they were on Themyscira.
Themyscira.
Yeah, they're on Themyscira for the first half of the movie.
Oh, yeah. The
discussion. But remember, not the discussion on Themyscira. Yeah. The discussion on Themyscira, as soon as the man shows up, is the man.
That's true.
But they do have conversations together, not about a
together.
Man. So it does
not
pass.
About a man.
It does. Yeah. Pass. All right. It
doesn't pass because it's only that half of the movie, not through the whole movie. Right. You have to have through the movie.
I guess. All right. Well. Okay. All right.
But you had a game. I'm assuming you had a game on this.
actually, the original Star Wars. Leia doesn't have anyone to talk to. No.
That's true.
That fails.
Wow.
It's just, you know.
Because there isn't even any lady stormtroopers. Well, wait, no. Does she talk to Mon Mothma?
No, until later.
Nobody talks to Mon Mothma. Yeah. She just gives presentation. Mon Mothma's there. She's there with the big PowerPoint. She's there with the about the boffins.
Oh, shit. She talks about it.
Big PowerPoint. Yeah. I mean, it's technically, it's like a PowerPoint. It's a three dimension.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, her mother did speak with Mon Mothma, but that scene ended up on the cutting room floor.
No,
but shit. I have seen the scene with Mon Mothma and
is it Mon Mothma or Mon Mothra?
Mon Mothra.
I wish it was Mon Mothra.
Mon Mothra. Mon Mothma.
A giant caterpillar.
Ladies,
what a PowerPoint presentation.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mon Mothra.
Mothra.
All right, that's enough of that.
There's never enough of that. Oh, those fairy twins, what delights. Oh,
well, wait.
They would pass.
They pass because they're not talking about guys.
They're always talking about Mothra, who's a chick.
Right.
But they don't, but funny enough, they don't actually talk to each other.
Yeah,
they're always talking to somebody else.
They don't speak to another girl.
I think that is true.
There is a young lady that's carrying their case around with the other guy. So I think they
Does it count?
Actually.
Does it count because they talk to Mothra, who is female? So does that count?
I think it counts, and they're not talking about a guy.
I think not,
because they're having a conversation.
The guy they're talking about is Godzilla.
Well, they're talking about Godzilla,
right? This mother.
Godzilla's
such language.
Remember that first. Remember their first Mothra movie. There is no Godzilla. There is Mothra.
It's just
her own movie, and it's awesome. It's a great movie. I love
it. I do remember that one.
Yeah.
Mark, what are you gonna say?
No, I was gonna say, well, Godzilla had a son who never really met the mother, so we're still kind of not sure on Godzilla's whole.
Don't go into biology.
Godzilla's a dude.
No, I'm saying biologically,
a reptile of some sort.
Amphibian.
Asexual reproduction.
What did he say in Jurassic
Park? Is this a life finds a way?
This is how we go off the rails. There,
same sexual environment.
Same sexual environment. Then
life will always find a way.
I know in the It Shall Not Be Spoken Of American version from the 90s with Matthew Broderick, I know that they specifically out and say that Godzilla is a hermaphrodite.
Yeah.
So
who lays eggs?
But we don't talk about that movie.
We do not talk about it.
It shall not be named. But
the freaking, because first of all, that wasn't Godzilla. That was a overgrown iguana. Yes, that's what that was.
Man.
That was an iguana that lived in Madison Square Garden for a little bit. Mm-hmm. That was not Godzilla. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna be Spider-Punk for a minute and be like, that was one of the best Godzilla movies ever.
Man, if I could reach you the screen right now, I would smack the words out your mouth.
And Godzilla destroyed the concept of what Godzilla should be.
I'm sorry.
I love it.
I have to disagree. Godzilla 1985. If you're going to go with the 90 version, we're going to have to go with that one.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, Lord.
I don't know, man. Go ahead.
Hey, well, Raymond Kirk Burr came back.
Yeah. and he should never have. The earlier point of him being an anarchist, folks.
exactly.
Because, hey, that's what anarchists do. Steve Van Sampson, has been an immense pleasure having you here.
Oh, thank you so much.
Take this next couple of minutes to plug your stuff, please.
Yes. So thank you guys, first of all, for having me on. This was incredibly fun. And as I said, I'm a fan of the show anyway, so it's just extra fun. So thank you very much. But my new one, guys, out there in listening land is Black Honey. There are two versions. There is the hardcover and there is the soft cover. They're both cool. They both have the same stories on the inside, and not just stories, but we have a bunch of fun extras that just fell out that you can't even see. We got double-sized trading cards that come with the hardcover version. Look at this. Like, we got monster trading cards that are 5x7s.
They come
to look like they came out of the 50s, kind of. But they're all just monsters from the various stories. Actually, we even have a vampire, No God But Hunger. Here's my vampire kids.
Oh, wow.
Red, red cherry eyes. Awesome. There you go. And there's a bunch of stuff. And also, every story in the book has an illustration by Derek Rook, who is my partner in crime. I will show you. this one right here, just at random. This is the illustration for Zandaxar. This is my 80s arcade game that I made up.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Very Stranger Things.
That one is very Stranger Things. This is a collection of short stories. They're unrelated for the most part, but they're all horror. They're all fun. They all are, you know, things I've been working on for, you know, over the years. Some of them have been published before. Some of them are brand new, but all the illustrations are brand new. You can get yours, honestly, if you're interested. Please go to the publisher, roughhousepublishing.com. Roughhousepublishing.com is the best place. That gives us the best margin by far. We'd really appreciate it. And also, it's the only place that you can get the signed versions. And all the extras are in the hardcover. Nice. Not just that, there's also some stickers. There's a black
sticker. Oh, wow.
And so there's a bunch of artwork that we crammed into this. And I do have to say, we did have we called it the Ultimate Edition, and it actually was both versions. And it came with one little bit of extra, little tidbit that we crammed into just the Ultimate Edition. And that was, it was a bottle of black honey hot sauce that we had made up from this guy in Vermont that we had crossed paths with and worked out a deal, and it was really, really cool. So we had some of those, but guys, we sold out last week. So the limited Ultimate Edition with the hot sauce is officially gone. There are plenty of hardcovers left, and the paperbacks and all that stuff. So if you're interested, please, roughhousepublishing.com. Thank you so much for letting me talk on your show and hearing my words. And, you know, hopefully we entertained you a little bit. I don't know.
I think you did. I think you succeeded in helping us with a very exciting episode. And I'm not even going to be mad at you for using Black Honey, you know, since that used to be my old stage name. Anyway.
Oh, was it?
Wait, you said old stage name?
Yes.
Black Honey.
I'm El Negro Terrifico now.
It does not roll off the tongue quite as well, but
exactly.
I'm not going to tell you.
We're still workshopping. To be fair,
hey, ain't that Black Honey?
Mark's face.
Isn't that Black Honey?
Ain't that Black Honey?
Well, you like to close out with a bang here at Deep Wine Shenanigans. And that's what we're doing, folks. I'm Stephen Van Patten for Stephen Van Sampson, Denise Tapscott, Kirk Johnson, and of course, Fishbait Mark Abbott. We thank you for listening. And we, we have to plug something. Why don't you, since you've got your indignant face on, Mark, why don't you take over?
So next Sunday, 9:00, for the very first time, Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans is going live. And we are interviewing Dark Shadows icon, Sharon Lentz. Mm-hmm. We are in the 57th anniversary of that classic soap opera. And she has agreed to give us her time and her evening. And we will be covering everything from Dark Shadows and everything beyond Dark Shadows with her. We're extremely excited to have this opportunity. And we will be live. And just keep an eye out, because we will be sending out a link. But we are in conjunction with Galactic Terrors, which you can find on YouTube. Mm-hmm. We will be streaming with them. And so if you look for Galactic Terrors, you'll find us and the promo for the show.
Yes. Terrors, being co-members of the New York chapter of the Horror Writers Association, they have been nice enough to loan us their living room for said interview. And it will be a blast, and we hope you all join us. In the meantime, and in between time and scream time, we are out. We love you. We mean it. Peace.